Welcome film industry professionals, film buffs, and aspiring filmmakers. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast presented by Paradoxical Films, and I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. Guys, join us on a journey behind the camera, and most importantly, beyond what we know about cinema and the craft of filmmaking. So, sit down, grab your popcorn, drink your soda, and let's ride the cinema road together with Cinema Pathway. All right, welcome to all listeners across the world to your new film family, Cinema Pathway Podcast, with your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. This podcast is for film buffs, film lovers, film critics, people who make films, people who watch films, people who just like to talk about film. You have found your new film family. When I think of Mr. Demerit's life, his triumphs, and overwhelming challenges, the vision of the Hope Diamond comes to mind. When light penetrates the diamond, it reflects off its facets, and each facet reflects light onto the other. The light of hope has radiated as a deep desire and expectation and a belief in fulfilling his dreams. Just like a multifaceted diamond, that light has penetrated his brilliant career as a filmmaker, a storyteller, a director, a producer, a DP, a music supervisor, a writer, and just like I figured out maybe about a few minutes ago, a rapper and a singer. I know he doesn't call himself a singer, but trust me, rapping is singing, right? Who knows what other path that Light of Hope will lead next in his career and his destiny. But I'm glad that for today, that light has shown its way all the way here to this humble little podcast. Everybody, we present to you Mr. Famous Deamus Demerit.
You got it right.
Hey.
And I have to give you kudos for that title.
Hey. Hope Diamond. I get 10 points?
Hope Listen, Diamond. That yeah. was, I'm going to have to take that. I'm going to give you credit for it now.
I get 10% later on in your career.
We're not saying
it.
That.
Okay.
What I'm saying is I'm giving you credit for it one time. So when you hear it again, you'll be like, I was the inspiration. Yes, you know, life, art imitates life, right?
Now.
But I'm glad to be here with you today. Appreciate
we talk
you
about
for
the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
We're to talk reals today, right?
Real honest. Talk, always.
This man has faced 3 life sentences plus 70 years
plus.
In jail, guys.
Was this facing. Means
facing,
was
but
facing.
He didn't serve it. How did that change your perspective on life? And how did that fuel your work in film?
There are people in jail right now for lesser things and been in there way longer. That situation that I went through in 2004, it made me grow up as a man. It also awoke me spiritually because I had a spiritual foundation of being forced to go to church, right? But it wasn't nothing that I willingly went in and did myself. But this forced me to have to face my demons, face my traumas, not point the finger outwardly, but look inwardly to say, no, you put yourself in this position. You just messed up your scholarship. You just went from being a starting running back on a football team to now looking at yourself on CNN, looking at the news, follow your mom to work and your sister to school. It was embarrassing on a lot of levels.
They follow you to school?
Listen, my sister couldn't go to school for a couple of days because they were out there and there was nothing you could do.
That's like a movie in itself, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And everybody in the cell, Demario, your family on the news again. It's crazy. We wake up out of the bunk and see my mom running to the door to close the door. And granted, at this time, my mom had just had breast cancer surgery. So she had a hole in her chest while the judge was telling her the capital offenses that I was facing at the time. So it was rough.
You realize that's literally like an outline to an actual movie, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a story that's going to be told one day. It has been being told through the circuit of going to football teams. I'll go to schools. I'll go to all these different organizations. I've been to Florida Memorial to speak to their whole athletic program just to let them know, listen, this is a blessing. Don't mess up this opportunity you got, because in order for me to get my degree, I had to go back and pay for that last year. And then when you realize how much you're paying out of pocket because you were so in your head thinking you was high in the clouds on full scholarship where you don't have to pay for nothing. Room or board, you don't have to pay for books, you don't have to pay for food, you got a card with $700, you get a stipend for another $2,500, so you take that stuff for granted when it's taken away from you. But then just the embarrassment for all the work I put in for one dumb decision or lack of, I blew everything. Years of work, years of sacrifice. I put in the work for that, to get at that position and at that platform, and I blew it all in one night on July 4th at 5:30 in the morning.
July 4th?
July 4th.
Independence Day.
Yep, and my mom was begging me to come home July 3rd. That whole night, she was like, just come home for the weekend. We're going to go hang out with family. And I'm like, I'll come in the morning. And I never made it that morning.
So To Each His Own, I know you, that's a beautiful work, guys. If you haven't seen To Each His Own, it's amazing. Seriously. Now it's going to season 3. Did that give you like inspiration to make those episodes, to give you the different content? Like, how does it fix your film career?
So I'm a collector of stories. And by that, I mean, I observe people around me and I learn without you having to tell me anything. I just watch your mannerisms. I watch how you interact with people around you. And so by that, I'm able to create these stories off of personalities. And I have true stories that I went through, because in Teach His Own season 1, I was actually transparent about me being molested by an uncle. So I actually put that in the story to tell that. And I tell young men, I said, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. I said, because if you could talk about it, that means you've confronted it and you've conquered it. So usually when we have those traumas, we don't talk about it because we haven't faced it. We're running away from it. So we don't want you to talk about it. It's taboo in our head. But when I was able to talk about it, I had already went through the healing internally and spiritually and mentally to be able to say, hey, I'm not less of a man. I was actually a little boy taken advantage of by a grown man, or a little boy in a grown man body.
I'm so sorry.
And he ended up facing like 20 years for something else, another sexual assault on another one of our family members at that time. But yeah, that was something I had to man up and, you know, face it.
So in your film work, right, do you take a more aggressive point of view? Because, you know, sometimes they always spoke from like for the first person point of view versus the third person. Has that changed the way you speak in different characters? You always give them from that, from a place of that place.
So To Each His Own, the unique thing about it was it was based off the two main characters. But once we had the table read, I scratched the whole script and went and wrote it over, because I seen not only the chemistry with the cast, but the eclectic story that we could build from it. So when you look at To Each His Own, what gravitates to the audience is everybody has a story, and that's real life. Everybody does have their own story, whether you think it's minor or major, that's here or there. It's still a story that has to be told, whether it be a mental health, whether it be a child abuse, whether it be you losing a child, or all them different facets of life. That's every day. We see it on the news every day. We see it on social media all the time.
So your strength is that you actually go for hard subjects. You know, a lot of people like to shy away. Okay, let's be honest. A lot of films that are made today are about sensationalism, right? Mm-hmm. They want to make money. They want to please the audience. Mm-hmm. But you go against that grain and you make things that make people think, right, that are thought-provoking, but also make them grab their stomach. Is mm-hmm. that what...
I'm glad you touched on that, because one thing I stress to our women in our films is that, hey, if you have a child, your child gonna see this one day. Oh. So I can't put you in a compromising position to have you showing all of your assets, and then later on, your child is watching a movie with his friends, and he's like, that's your mama right there? And we know how the cracking and the jokes get on, but we ain't play with our mamas in my day. Like, you say something about my mom, we have to fight. So I tell our women, uh-huh, we're doing it with integrity, we're doing it with respect, because in the 70s and 80s, we could see a film, and they allowed the imagination to do it. You didn't have to show the whole sex scene, but you knew just by certain movements, it was going into that direction. Let the mind and its creativity do what it do. So
that's what you meant by assets. So when you mean showing assets, you mean they're showing different parts of themselves. That's
too much.
Okay, I would love to touch on this subject. This is something that I wasn't, but we got to. I'm glad you opened up that floodgate. All right, sometimes people tend to go towards sex, mm-hmm, right?
It's easy
to be able to sell, right? And they always shy away from the, how do I say,
the substance.
Mm-hmm. Right? Have you ever had to confront something like that in your own career, where because you wanted to sell something or sell a film, that you went more toward the sex versus the substance, like a lot of today's music and movies do?
No, I don't believe in putting myself or anybody else in any compromising position. I've started out in theater before I came in film. And so I had a director who just wanted me to do these kissing scenes all the time. So I know you hear these stories all the time, but at certain points, you just got to put your foot down.
What kind of theater did you do? I'm a theater
I've
kid
done
too.
Theater. I've done theater for years. Yeah. My soul is bleeding. I was the star. I was the lead in Passion's play, Release Me. I was the lead guy in that one, almost 300 pages worth of script. So I started in theater before I came to film. So that gave me the discipline of the craft for acting in itself. And it also gave me the connection with the actors that I have and I work with and our little ecosystem that we're building and stuff. But to answer your question, it's not that I go and tackle the hard topics. I tell our stories from our perspective. And I believe you can give people medicine with candy. So if I give you candy, right, and I'm giving you something hard, you're able to digest it if it's sweet.
You give them medicine?
With candy.
With candy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so instead of shoving down a very hard subject like we've seen in 12 Years a Slave, like we've seen in Schindler's List, like we've seen in a lot of these Oscar award winning movies, you tend to tell a message, but soften the blow a little bit.
Or creatively put it in where it happens subliminally, where the subconscious mind may catch it and objectively you're not really paying attention to it until later. And you're like, wait, did see that? They did say that. So it's different ways you can work the creativity and the mind. I guess that's that philosopher in me and being able to attack it through the emotions, through the literal senses. So, you know, I try to attack it from every phase.
I'm curious now, what is your main shooting style? I know a lot of people like over the shoulder, a lot of people like close-up shots, a lot of people like these wide expanding shots, like a lot of these action movies.
Right.
What is your main shooting style?
It's depending on the project.
I
can't go in with one ABC concrete way of doing it because that's not going to tell that story. So if we're working on a romantic series or project, I can't go in it the same way if I'm doing aggressive content or street content and things like that. So the angles have to be different. They have to be more tracking or trucking shots. Got to be more pulling in or pulling out, or am I doing more drones in this? So I'm using different angles to tell that story, because this is the importance of a good DP, and I have a great DP, James O'Neill, Joe Wesley.
Now for everybody, what's a DP?
It's a director of photography. They're the person
director,
that is, they're the people that they're telling the story with the director, but they're using the camera to tell the story. And so you have to allow them to have a voice in what you're doing, because their artistic perspective is just as important if you trust them. So if we're doing it, we're working on the tone. How slow is it going? How is the color bouncing off of it? You know, do we want shadows in it? Do we want the foreground? Do we want all of this stuff? It's going in to learn the basics and the craft of shooting. And most people just think it's just picking up a phone and just going to shoot, and you're actually disrespecting the craft by doing that. But, you know, shout out to you for at least having the initiative to do it.
Now, most people like to shoot during the day because they think it's the daylight, right? But I've always known about the golden hour. You know about the golden hour, right?
The
little minute between like 5 and 6, right?
Yes.
I'm always curious. Do you like shooting in that kind of lighting? Does that tell your stories better? Or do you like really more like studio lighting? Because sometimes they feel like studio lighting sometimes can make things a little bit more superficial, kind of like game show-ish, versus like a movie where you can see someone's like their crow's feet or the crow's eyes or the wrinkles on their forehead. I mean, their actual genuine emotion. I've always wondered that.
But you can see that in both interior and exterior.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying about the golden hour. My DP loves that time of the day. But at the end of the day, with the cameras and the lenses that are on there now, they get so much definition. Or what type of definition do you want to do? Do you want to do it anamorphic? Do you want to do it spherical? Do you want it? Like, these are the different type of conversations you got to have when you're going into a project. It's not just, all right, we got the budget, we got the script, we got the actors, let's go do it. No, we got to do a shot list. We got to do a location scouting. We have to go, what color palette do we want for these characters? All of this tells a story, because colors mean tones, right? So you have to
look at how do colors play in a film? How do the tone feel?
Pivotal.
Can you give an example?
Emotional scene. You may have some dark blue back shadows. You may have sitting in front of a window and push a light through the window where the blinds are showing on their face, and it shows more intensity in the scene. So you have all these little things that create the story.
See, I always wondered, because when I've done my own shots, right, or part of the movies, they've always made me sit in a certain angle, right, versus closing up on the eyes and concentrating on what my facial expression is saying more than my voice. And I always wondered, why is that? It's because the tone of the actual film tells more of the scene and what the person's feeling inside than the actual words coming out of their mouth. So it's all about body language.
That's what I was leading to. It's the basic economics of humanity. Body language speaks before the words come out of your mouth.
Ooh,
I respond to you before
that's
I
good.
Even say anything, whether it be an eye twitch, whether it be an eye roll, whether you see my mouth roll in a little bit, that says anything. Like, and our women are terrible at it, because most of them can't hide their facial expressions, and we see it. What did I do? You said it on your face. That's what you did.
You said it on your face, man. What you did? You did a lot of stuff, you know? You did a lot of stuff.
But don't get me beat up by my wife.
His wife is a therapist, and she can definitely psychoanalyze us as much as possible. So if you're listening, hi, honey.
But I'm a philosopher, so you better come prepared.
Now, it is said that the art of storytelling began 30,000 years ago. Did you know that? 30,000 years ago.
No, I had to go back way beyond that. You're talking about tribal days. You're probably talking about when it's documented storytelling, when they're able to put it in books. But when you go back to the tribal days, whether it's in Mexico or Africa or in the islands, they tell stories orally. So these were passed down traditions through songs, through little hymns and things like that. That was storytelling.
Oh, okay. Well, a famous PhD on the internet says something different. So maybe you... But see, that's why we have people like this in the studio to give us the real intelligence. You see why he's a diamond? He's shining the light of intelligence in this podcast. I love you, man. Now, it was told in France. It says, was it told in France, you think? That's what it said.
I'm going to let you go ahead and tell it the way you did the research. So yes. I'm just going to interject from time to time.
If it was really in Africa, I need to know, okay?
No, it's not about where it was.
Yeah,
it was
it's where just, it covered.
You didn't have pencil and paper.
Yeah,
right? You didn't have books being collected. So it went through the stories.
Are there any stories from your childhood to now that you believe consciously or subconsciously crept into your work in film?
It was all the evolution because I was a poet writer. I was in karate. I was in sports growing up, but I used to write poetry because I loved the ladies. And I knew, words had a, way of swooning women in. So, I slide a little poetry over to, with a bag of Skittles and stuff like that, with the and that's where it came in. And then I evolved to music, where you learn to do it with a beat, right? And so I was always with storytelling. Coming out of the gutter, never was undercover, but a bad little brother, never taught to be a lover, but the hustle on the block, only raising a single mother. So I ran the street, hot knife through butter. So just little things like that, able to tell a story lyrically, right? So it all builds on my whole life story. I wouldn't have been able to be here if I skipped any of those steps.
Please don't miss segment two. We see you in a minute. Demerit. I'm saying it right. Demerit. See you guys in a bit. Welcome to Tell Your Story. It is a masterclass hands-on workshop that is presented by Cine Video Tech and brought to you by Paradoxical Films. You will learn how to work with actual film, 16mm, Super 16mm, 35mm, and film cameras. In addition, how to load them and change magazines. Furthermore, the workshop will prepare you on how and what it takes to work on set as a first or second assistant camera, the fundamentals of lighting, and the pathway to become a director of photography. For information about the classes and updates, everything will be posted on our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/tell-your-story. Welcome back, film family, with Mr. Famous DeAmus Demerit. But we will give no demerits out today because he deserves a gold star. Did you hear everything he just said? He was teaching me stuff. See that? Mr. Philosopher in the room. All right. Taking the best and making it your own. As a music supervisor yourself, what did you take on the epidemic of music sampling? When you sample some little thing, especially from film scores, And to what point is it plagiarism? Well, basically one company or artist steal someone else's work versus sampling, because there's a lot of that today,
right? And there's definitely two different things, because sampling is honoring the person who created it, but at the same time, artistically, we know that hip-hop and everything came from sampling. That was all it was. They were standing out there remixing R&B tracks, and that's how they became Bad Boy, Mary J. Blige, all the samples throughout history. So artistically, I don't have a problem with it, but at the end of the day, you have to respect the business. If a person has their business in order, you have to respect it. You got to talk to their publisher, and you have to reach out to them, and the certain percentage you got to give them on that, whatever it is that you're generating. We had a story with that in season one that I didn't know at the time, but my producer scored one of the songs on there, and we got an email from the Marvin Gaye Estates, an actual email. And there...
Wait, Marvin Gaye? What's going on?
Marvin Gaye. Because one of the songs we used was a sample off of his. And when I went and listened to the song, I was like, oh my gosh, it's the exact same everything, rhythm, tone. So they emailed us twice and they said, listen, business, we'll work with you. We'll let you use it and come back on the back end and say how much we want. Told my team, take it off right now because that's a setup.
But explain. Okay, so the back end means what? People need to know.
You see how people, when they sample songs, Juice WRLD and all them, and they got sued for hundreds of millions of dollars? Yeah. You think them people didn't get alerted as soon as they knew the song came out?
They waited
till the song raised up in value. And then they took them to court and got the majority of what they could get.
And this is important because, a lot of people, they don't do it on purpose, especially if you're new filmmakers.
Do. Oh, no, this stuff is on purpose. You tripping.
No. I mean new filmmakers.
This is malicious. They are intentionally doing this. If they know that your song, because they're looking at everything that the big studios are doing. And so you see all the old sampled songs when that was, what was the Jordan Peele song? I Got Five on It. And they used it for the you're seeing the trailers all have these sample songs from the 80s and 90s in there.
But they don't pay the original person.
They do the big studios, whoever owned the publishing. But as an independent level, you probably don't have the budget to be able to reach out to them publishing companies and say, hey, I want to sample this, or I want to license this for a project, because when they give you the zeros and the numbers, you're not going to take that.
But what if you're like an average filmmaker who just likes a song and thinks it'd be perfect for it? So, okay, so for any people making a film, right?
Then do a non-monetization. If you're going to just do it creatively,
okay,
don't monetize it.
Don't monetize it.
You get
it
to a monetization state on YouTube.
Do you have to come up with like a document and send it to the original creator of the work? Or if it's, as long as you're not making money, you don't have to contact
them. You're not understanding me, Michelangelo. What? As soon as it hits online, they have systems that flag it, and they get automatic emails, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on IG. Universal Music Group snatching most of their music off now. So if you have their music on there on IG, they probably could sue IG for that at a certain point. So it's
even if it's a random person, just a random person who has no money, just a random Joe Schmo.
They'll just take it down. They'll mute it.
Oh, that's why when you see on YouTube when they say copyright violations. I honestly didn't know that. I mean, I'm in music, and I honestly didn't know that.
Most artists don't own their publishing or their masters, right? So they're going to the big companies to get these licensing through. But when you're working independently, let's say the Marvin Gaye Estates, so he probably owns a portion of it. So that's why they were able to reach out and reply to the way they did. But we still end up saying, no, we're not going to get screwed in the background. Go ahead and take it down. It messed us up on premiering.
So basically, because you have the music in the background, they can take a lot more than you intended, especially with your overall sales, right? Is that,
you know how important music is, correct?
Of course.
It sets the tone for the
it
film.
It really does.
You ever listen to a film without music?
Of course. No, actually, never.
Say, don't even, no, no, you didn't even listen to me. You just went agreeing with me.
No, but it's true. It's true. Mr. DeMarit.
But you need.
I'm sorry, Mr. DeMarit.
But the music sets the emotion and the tones of it. So it's equally important. So that person put in that hard earned time in that studio of creating the lyrics or creating a beat, they're going to want credit for it. Some of them may even say, hey, I don't want no money. Just make sure my name is in the credit for it. Whatever you be able to negotiate with them. So, I believe in creating a brand and a company where when we start reaching out to these people, they'll see our track record. They'll see our work. It will speak for itself, where it's not just some, oh, you just trying to do it because it's a quick money scheme, which everybody using music and
which
film and now.
Yeah,
it's just a get rich scheme. So they go on the tube, be putting out crappy stuff. It's horrible, right? But they're making money from it because they're making it over-sexualized. And it's always somebody getting shot or killed. And there's no storytelling in it, but it's able to keep a person's engagement for over 30 minutes because people scroll on social media and that's all they want to see. Somebody getting shot, somebody getting robbed, somebody in
the drama
stuff. It's that. But
and
it's no,
see what we talked about earlier? Sensationalism.
But that's, they use it for that.
Don't give in to sensationalism just to get your numbers up is what you're basically saying. Right. Use your brain, right? And come up with something unique and something that tells your story without having to give in to everything that most of these major studios give into. I give you props for doing that because a lot of people will buckle under that knife and say, you know what? I need money and I need my production company to grow. So I'm going to give in to whatever is the hot thing of the moment. What was the moment that you realized that this was something you do for the rest of your life? When you realized the arts? Because I know that you do many different things. But when was the moment in your life where you realized this is where I transitioned into a serious filmmaker or a serious producer? Because those are pretty big titles.
Right. I'm actually still learning it. I haven't arrived anywhere. I'm still learning the craft. I'm still learning how to be a director. I'm still learning how to be a president over a company. I'm still learning how to navigate and just learning the foundation of it, because people try to come in and change things around, but you don't even know the foundation of how it was done. The basics of writing a real script that has a real story, a beginning and end, and it flows well. So it's just, yeah, man.
Where did you get your training? Because you're very eloquent, your speech. Where did you get your training for all of these different artistic careers that you have now?
YouTube Academy. No, I'm just playing. But
really? No. But you'd be surprised,
no,
guys.
Some people
learn from YouTube.
I've spent time on YouTube, but I'll say this. This is the purpose of having a good community, because those people who are seasoned in it, 20 years, James O'Neill, who's been doing DP for almost 20 plus years, he's sending me homework every week. Study this director, study this lighting, study this way. And I have to sit down and do it myself. So I'm isolated a lot because I need to study. I have to grow. So when I come back out, you really see, oh, that's what you've been in there doing all that time. So from season one to season two, you see the growth. Season two to season three, you see the growth, because I had to go hibernate for a little bit in my learning chamber and I had to go up my skills.
See, this is different because a lot of people come from that microwave society where they think, all right, I'd have to get this done at a certain time. I have to have a certain amount of messages or a certain amount of points to give to make the audience happy, and microwave 10 seconds and here's a movie. And then that's where you get that emptiness from. It also creeps into music as well.
Oh yeah.
But especially in film, I always tell people, like you said, hibernate and really listen to what your heart and your mind is saying. And if you have to research different directors, research different producers, see how they work their set before you ever call yourself anything. You never want to do anything prematurely, especially in this world, because sometimes the last project usually is the only project you have, because that's all they know you from. You could have had amazing work for the past 20, 30 years, but the last thing they saw you and the last thing they see you directed, the last thing they see you act in, is what they're going to judge your entire body of work in, sadly.
Right, instead of looking at the holistic thing, the whole body of work. Yeah, you can't skip steps. And the thing is, you disrespect the people who put in the work for it, for you to be able to tell the stories as easy as we do to put them on these platforms. People had to go through years of production before they got one project out, right? And we're throwing these things out every month.
Doesn't have to be school, but no. You have to school yourself, right?
No. You have to learn the craft. You have to. Why, all the master classes we have out there, are you going to invest in your, you know, pay for a video or two, pay for a mentor, pay for somebody to give you some critical analysis? I had one thing before I released the project musically where I invited 40 people over to my house personally. And I had folders for all 40 of them. There was DJs, bloggers. There were all type of different people, all walks of life. And I went through my album with them and I said, okay, I want you to critique everything on here. And I left with viable information on my album. I knew what to put out for the single, all of that.
So you left yourself like a carcass on a table.
That's just what my producer said. He said,
you did.
Who nails themselves to the cross?
Yeah. Because you know, with all these different opinions.
Oh, it came. And that's just how it went. I had to take it.
But you know what? You probably learned more from that. Because if you see it from a different person's point of view, ultimately, right? They tell you, I don't like this acting. I don't like the way you shot this. I don't like the way you presented this because I don't understand. Just recently, something we had done in studio. What do you call that? Where you summarize the episode and things of that nature. And I remember saying it out loud. And the person in there was a good friend said, I understand where you're coming from, but the way you wrote it, the way you presented it, it's not coming off that way. And that taught me more, because I'm like, look, if the average person can't look at your film, I can't look at your work and understand it from the very first frame, then maybe you should rethink it. Now, doesn't mean you have to please everybody, guys.
No.
You
no,
do
that's
the best.
Trusted counsel.
Trusted counsel. Yeah, people who love and care for you, not trying to bring you down in this career, because you know how this career could be.
The power and partnership. Listen, the wrong person can see you in peace and leave you in pieces. The right person will see you in pieces and lead you to peace. Wow. It's all about the people who you're partnering with, the people who you're connecting with. That is so vital. If you don't have good people around you who you trust to take their counsel, why do you have them around you? The people around you, you ought to give them access to be able to scold you and hold you accountable or tell you, hey, your last one looked good, but that looks a little... Mm-mm.
So basically, people in your production company, am I saying it right?
Ampu,
right?
Ampu Production.
Everybody you have is someone who is trusted, someone who you know will give you valid advice, critical advice, and things you need to hear, not things that you want to hear, you know? Yeah. Especially when it comes to skills. When you have a certain skill set, especially as a filmmaker, right? You never want to let yourself slip down a horrible slope of pride and ego, where it's like, well, I've done this and I've done the other. And, you know, you have to listen to me because I know what's best. No, the best inspiration you can get are from the people around you, people you don't expect, and people who would tell you the truth.
Success is when everybody around you is successful, not just you. So when we're pushing everything, it's not about, oh, you directed it, you created it and wrote it. So what? It wouldn't have came to life if the actors wouldn't have sacrificed their time and their talent to come in here, or the DP didn't take his time to read the script and go over the lighting program and us get a shot list together and all this. It does not matter. I do not matter. So I am an important part of the equation, but at the same time, equally, I'm not.
You're not the only part. And guys, everybody from the director down to the actors, down to the people who get your coffee, down to the people who clean those floors on that film set, they're all just as important, because if it wasn't for all those little pieces, the big piece wouldn't work. And we've seen that, right?
And the good thing about that, we're talking in business, right? But person's personality and character is, that's who they are. So if you treat people like that on set, how do you treat people outside of set? How do you talk to the everyday Joe Blow, you know, that you see crossing the mom-pop store?
And you want to get rehired, right? That's another thing, guys. Think about your attitude and everything that you project onto that set. We're talking to a film stage and a film set. Everything you do, from saying hello to saying goodbye to what you do in front of that camera, yeah, you could have given an epic performance and everyone could have been clapping. It was wonderful and they got it on screen. Great. But if that director or if that producer says, I really don't want to work with this person on a movie set that's 3, 6, a year long, right? You don't get rehired. So your character and your attitude is just as important as the time that you give.
And ethically, what you're doing on social media now also. I hate to put it like that. Yes, it's your world. You can do whatever you want to do. But the perception and everything you're putting out there to the world, it represents us in connection. So if I don't like the way you're carrying yourself, I'm sorry. I could love you as a person. But until that image and that representation change, we just can't do good business like that.
Yes. See you guys in a bit. We would like to take a moment to thank our partners who help make this podcast possible. Cine Video Tech has been providing film equipment, training, and services to the film industry both inside and outside the U.S. since 1968, which provides directing, writing, and assistant director services. And ComTV offers consulting and production services for a wide range of entertainment, marketing, advertising, and commercial projects. Welcome back with Mr. Demerit. I'm telling you, this conversation has been hot from the beginning.
Yes.
Where do you get all that knowledge from, that philosophical knowledge?
Grandma always told me, readers are leaders.
Okay. I'm telling you, these gems. Are you guys writing this stuff down? I mean, you're literally getting like a free class. You know, he's probably going to charge me, but anyway, that's a different story. All right.
The invoice is coming.
This segment is called Movies, 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 where we talk about Mr. Okay. Demerit and his invaluable experience and expertise in film, and how film might shine the light on things that need to be exposed and brought to light. All right? Okay, okay. Things need to be exposed and brought to light.
Jeez.
Some in your own stuff and some that movies that have been prominent now, all right?
Okay.
The Sound of Freedom is one of the most controversial movies in cinema today. Not only did it shatter records in the millions, I'm talking about millions, of unexpected moviegoers, right? But it also shined the light on the horrible underbelly of the world that we live in today. Voices of people who normally wouldn't have it, right? This movie and other movies like it have included child sex trafficking. Right. I mean, it's a real tearjerker. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that millions of kids around the world, even today, are being subjected to this. And I only knew about it through film. So it goes to show you how powerful the film media really is, because it really does expose things that you normally wouldn't know about.
True. Or you're just not looking for it.
Or not
look in your face.
Exactly.
That's the thing that,
and this is
on.
Happening in our backyard.
It happens all around us.
You realize this, right?
We don't know what to identify or what to conceptualize, so we don't know what we're looking at, but it's happening right in front of us. And the reason I say that is because, by my wife being a therapist and social worker, we've had instances where she's been called to trailer homes and to find out the parent is prostituting the daughter off to the people behind them because she want drug money, she want alcohol money. So my wife has to take this child out of there, and I'm sitting there wondering, like, who you going over there with? You're not going over there by yourself. But you have these instances going on right in front of us. It's everyday people. You could be working with these people and not knowing the stuff that they're going through. So the fact that you said that the sex trafficking, that's something that's prominent as far as the storytelling right now, because we're seeing all these trafficking cases come out. You saw the rabbis, the Jews up in New York. They found the underground tunnel where there was trafficking people. So this stuff is being exposed, but it's been going on all around us. These children are not just disappearing out of nowhere. In Cleveland, it's almost 30 children gone. Like, what's going on? You can't find, but you can find out where Saddam Hussein is on a mountain over and across on another continent, but you can't find these children.
That has nothing to do with us.
Even still, we have the technology to find it. That's what I'm saying. That the point is, like, you could look across another continent, but you can't find out what's going on in your own backyard. So the fact that you said that with that. People like me live
the Sound of Freedom. Yeah.
I live those experiences because I come across them in the most hideous of ways. You know, my fiance is a retired detective for the city of Miami. So I was hearing all type of horror stories, finding bodies that was decomposing for weeks, that they have to go to the point where he couldn't even come in the house and change clothes. He had to have all his clothes changed outside because of the smell of the dead bodies and the smell of the drugs that they would have to pick up and stuff like that. So, yeah, man, this film is important, but with a film not around. And that's the point. I'm going to say this. That's the importance of us not being silenced. See, silence is not always golden, right? When you're quiet, the stuff that's going on, when you know, you privy to it, you've been exposed to it, and you just sit there and harbor that information in, and you don't share it, especially when it can help a generation, help a family. It's ludicrous, man.
I know it's sad what happened to you when you were younger. Uh-huh. I know about the molestation. I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry about
don't be.
Different. But the reason why I bring that up is because that's how powerful this medium of film really is. Mm-hmm. And about people not denying their own story and just going for the money for sensationalism. Because in porn stories, they can actually change lives. Yes, you may not make millions of dollars, but the real treasure is how many lives are you going to save? How many lives are you going to bring to the forefront that people had no idea about? And it becomes a trickle effect, right? A domino effect. You change this life, all of a sudden this entire community is exposed, and then in another entire community exposed, and then that person who watched it in Japan, who the same thing is happening to them, says, you know what? Maybe I should speak up and say something. So you have no idea how powerful your story is, and no matter how ugly your story is, and that's what I was saying. I don't like saying ugly. I like saying challenging.
True, but It just comes to the type of person that you are. Like, yes, it depends on the topic that you're talking about with the story, but you have to remember this. If you're exposed to something or you have information about something and you don't say nothing to do anything about it, the blood is on your hands, right? So we have an obligation as a community of people to hold each other accountable.
And
so
especially it's filmmakers.
Cool. It's cool to do it artistically, and that's more when you go into documentary styles. I can't remember what was the guy name who made 9/11? Michael, I can't remember, but he would go and he would deal with these elephant in the room conversations where everybody hide it, everybody sweep it under the rug, and he would deal with it. He would go and get these interviews and expose these things. And to be honest, everybody's job is not to expose, right? I don't think it's nobody's job, period, but you can ring the alarm to what's going on around you, right? You can bring an awareness to what's going on around you, but I don't think that one person is empowered to be the judge and the executioner, you know, especially when we got a creator. Most High, you have something that you believe in that's outside of you. You have to let karma deal with it. Yeah. But at the same
time, positive
affirmations,
yes.
Right. You're talking about positive. We're talking about dealing with the negative, right?
Well, you need positive to deal with the negative. That's what
I mean. Let me tell you this. Because people say love, hate, right?
Yeah.
And I always say, no, I just love strong, right? And I say, I love my family enough that if you come threaten my family, I will lay you down.
Hmm.
That has nothing to do with hate. That has all to do with love.
And protection.
So, mm-hmm. Right. So
dealing and that's with them, positive.
Right. But with them ugly situations, you have to take it as it is. There's always a dynamic. It's a duality in life. There's positive, there's negative. There's light, there's dark. There's up, there's down. It's a duality with everything. So without that ugly, you would never be able to recognize and appreciate the beautiful parts of life. So like we were talking about before, you need those struggles. You need those ugly moments. You need those dark times because they bring out another side of humanity that you probably didn't recognize at that time. Had I not faced 3 life sentences going to age 21, I wouldn't be going into age 40. I know I don't look at it. It's okay. I wouldn't be going, you know, I wouldn't be age 40. But I wouldn't be the man that I am without that experience. So it was good that I faced that early in my life. So now I have a different appreciation of life. I have a different appreciation of empowering the people around me, a different appreciation and perspective of say something. Just say something. That was my whole thing. Like, I knew the people around me who I got in the case with. I knew most of them wasn't good dudes. They were my teammates, but they were assholes. I can say assholes, right? I can say assholes. Okay, they were assholes.
Say it like you mean it. Go
ahead. And my spirit was discerning at the time, but I was just trying to be a good teammate. So I bring them around the house because they out of town. So I let them eat with my family, and then come. I'm facing 3 life sentences. They throwing all the stolen products in my apartment because I got arrested first. I was outside at 5 in the morning, just chilling with a girl. But they got me, and then they searched my trunk, and all the evidence from all the robberies is in my trunk. So that's why I got thrown the most on my case.
See, now it's interesting. You talk about dark and light, right? When it's related to film. People have a tendency to shy away from those traumatic experiences, saying that it's too traumatic to put it on film. Meaning how? That... Exactly. So for movies like 12 Years a Slave, right? Or Schindler's List, I think when you get to the core of how ugly life can be, that can teach people more... Right. And grab their attention more than shying away from it. And basically, you see where
said,
I'm going.
You said how ugly life could be. No,
yes.
Life is beautiful. Shit. It's people that's ugly.
Oh,
hell, you talking about life
we're going
is beautiful.
There now.
Nature
okay.
ain't attacked like nature.
Well,
the only reason why nature reacting the way it is because of the way that we're treating the planet. Right. So okay. Nature in itself is beautiful. Life is beautiful. It's people. It's the potential of what we, you know.
So let's just for it to each his own. First of all, if you just heard his story now, you definitely have to watch Each His Own, because a lot of these episodes that he has on there tackles these issues like schizophrenia, things that people usually don't talk about, especially, I don't know what it is in the African-American community. Usually therapy seems to be something that they kind of shy away from.
It was taboo.
It was taboo. And now it's becoming more mainstream. What are some of the prominent issues, right, that you bring to the forefront in your series or in your past works? I know schizophrenia is one, but what's another?
I don't go in with the aim of trying to identify issues.
No.
Yeah. What I try to do is show the disconnect in relationships. So if you see a mother and a son, it's spurred from her knowing that her brother molested her son. But we get into the core of why didn't you do anything? It's accountability.
Accountability.
Again. So we're dealing with it. We're facing it. And how do we get over this hurdle? Because we don't sit on them issues. We've tried to navigate away. The person with schizophrenia, we have a therapist in the scene or in the series where that person is trying to be the devil's advocate. Like, nah, don't listen to them voices telling you to do them crazy things. Let's go get some medication. Let's go to a doctor. We can get some real help. So life is not about focusing on a problem, but like I said, it's about finding a solution into it. So it's not.
And this is how you tackle your work
overall.
This is
how I tackle it.
You tackle your work where my approach was, let's just highlight and expose the problem. You're saying, let's find a solution, and that'll expose the problem in itself.
You already know the problem there. Everybody know the problems that are going on around us, but what are we doing to think of the situation, the solutions? Everybody know that we have a homeless problem going on, right? Everybody know that we have a lack of literacy where these boys can't read over a third grade level. Everybody know that. But what are we doing to find the solutions?
How do your films tackle sensitive subjects like that? For example, obviously The Sound of Freedom is about child sex trafficking.
I give you one.
And they had some really, when I mean, I don't think I've cried that much in my life when I saw the adult touch that child on film. And I always think, right? Because nobody really wants to play the bad guy in a film that way, right? Because like, oh, I don't want to be typecast in playing such a dark role. But it has to be told, right? But they did it in such a, I would say, a magnificent way. It was very, very tasteful. Yeah, they had graphic scenes, but they never went there where they exposed a child or exposed an adult in any way. But people knew, they could assume what was happening. How did you tackle, or how would you tackle sensitive scenes like that?
Are you talking graphically?
Yes.
Don't.
As a filmmaker.
You don't have to. You let the subconscious, you let the
That's what
the
I mean. Like how far do you go, or how far have you gone in your own works?
No, I'm from the old school era where you didn't have to show everything. But what I would say, as far as one of the hardest issues I think we tackled as a production team, was a project we had called The Weight of the Crown. And The Weight of the Crown talked about the plight of being a teacher in America. The fact that you have teachers who are busting their butt, they're empowering the generation, and they really do care about these kids, but they're struggling to keep their bills on. They're struggling to have to work two or three jobs because they don't get paid enough to be able to do what they love and still take care of their family. So I think all of it is I don't want to say graphical or gruesome because it's different extremes of it. You're looking for blood, but I'm talking about this person over here who's struggling to eat and don't got no gas to get to school, but yet they're still walking to get there to do their job to empower other people, right? So it's all the different levels of what you're looking for. Some people go looking for that gruesome stuff. Some people go looking for intellectual horrifying things, you know, mental stimulation.
You mean basically scenes that are inferred versus actually seeing it on screen?
Right.
It's like, you know, for example, you know they're having sex, but you could imply it without actually having the two people have that. I think a lot of because of the wonderful world of CGI and AI, I think a lot of things are implied now, and a lot of people can get away with things in movies because they don't actually have to have the actors in the set doing things that usually would cost a lot more.
Did you really just say that? After Power is out? And I ain't knocking Power because I sit and watch it with my wife.
That's true. That's true. Most.
Everything.
Let's just say most.
They showing everything except the sock in the middle. Come on now. It's like they was about to call Hugh Hefner over there to come direct the scene.
Well,
I ain't putting you down, 50 or nobody.
No.
But what I'm saying is, it's all around us.
It is all around us.
It's all around us. You see a headshot? I mean, we actually had a shooting scene in season 3 where my wife looked at me after she said, was that real? And I was like, you think I'm gonna kill somebody on camera? What's wrong with you? Like, no, it was CGI. It was added in afterwards, which the real effect, and that showed me as well how that desensitizes us, right? That in social media, that we seeing these things over and over, somebody getting shot in the head getting chopped off, that when we see it in real life, or it's going on in a third world country, or it's going on somewhere in real life, we don't even look at it the same depth. We look at it like, oh, you know, casualties of war. No, that was a child and a mother. They just bombed the whole school. Like, what are you talking about? Like, let's identify it and say what it is. So, yeah, man, we're in a weird time.
I love your film style because you don't shy away from anything. You really tackle it head on. While some filmmakers have a way of going around the subject mm-hmm. without tackling it directly, you're the other way around.
Wouldn't you say that's the person?
Yeah.
Because we could say Spike Lee.
That's true.
He went on the Jungle Fever.
Well,
went on to Do the Right Thing.
Yes, he did.
He went on to Crooklyn where they was talking about the cocaine epidemic during that time.
Yes.
These are issues he's tackling in that time. It might not be as relevant right now, but in that time, it was needed and he was tackling it. So it's learning from my ancestors, learning from the people who came before me, the people who didn't have jelly spine. They actually had a back.
Which filmmakers inspire you the most to do what you're doing now? That you can honestly say, wow, this person inspired me to do this. I mean, I have a few of mine, to be honest with
you. Nobody.
Nobody. Why?
I draw from everything. Like, I learned from Bradley Cooper. I learned from Spike Lee. I learned from Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
Martin
Scorsese. Oh, of course.
Right. So yes. I study him. Right. I study life. But your inspiration has to be something that a passion burning in you, right? And a lot of people like to give that credit to other people, but it has to be something that you dream of, because at the end of the day, me being inspired by what you do is not going to make me keep going when I want
to
quit.
Or it has to be something that you're inspired by.
It has to burn in me.
It has to be my passion.
So I could look at it and say, oh, that was so dope. Oh, I appreciate how they did this or how they told this story. But at the end of the day, I have to know it's my purpose to do
it. Okay. So this next segment is called To Each His Own Corner. Are you ready?
Oh, man. Hello, well, to each his own corner. So to each his own.
Uh-huh.
Hold on, is this new?
I do my research.
This new? Okay.
I do my research, sir. Are you ready? To each his own corner.
Let's sit up. Let me get my body language.
Yes. If anybody didn't know, if I haven't said it enough in this podcast, season 3 of To Each His Own, one of his most prominent works is coming out. It tackles things.
It's out.
Oh, it's out?
Prime Video Live.
Oh, stream. On Prime Video
go
Live.
Get
okay, go,
go
get it right now. Okay.
Go ahead. I'm ready.
So, you are... Well, let me get my notes. All right. You are a resident actor in the house as well. Damus.
He's murdering it, y'all.
Damus.
Like, and
D'Amos.
I ain't talking about it in the
D'Amos.
Good way.
Has starred in, produced, written, and directed an award-winning series called To Each His Own. We show with the right motivation, delight, and tenacity, you can wear many hats in film and in entertainment business today. Like you. Like you've had to wear many hats just to make this happen. Question number one, as an actor, what is the greatest challenge you filmed while shooting this film? The greatest challenge.
Season 1, episode 2, barbershop scene, when I had to go back and dig into the time of the molestation because it was actually a character confronting the person who molested him. And so I actually had to get into it, and I went a little too far in it where they had to pull
how
me
so?
Out. Mentally, I was there. Mentally, if I'd have saw my uncle right there, I'd have killed him.
Stay tuned. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, and we hope that you do, we hope, right? Support us by subscribing to your favorite podcast platform and giving us a rating. Then head to our online store at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop, where you can purchase Cinema Pathway gear, including t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Also, don't forget, follow us on Instagram at cinema_pathway_podcast. Again, that's cinema_pathway_podcast for all the behind the scenes photos and more. We are back, film family, with the final segment. I have to admit, I'm kind of sad it's the final segment. I mean, do you have to go? Can you just stay? Can we do like maybe 2 or 3 more episodes? Is that all right?
That's when you go that far, that's why I say know yourself. When you're able to do the inner work, the shadow work, go through your traumas and facing and confronting this stuff, you know where it can take you. Because mentally, you've had these thoughts in your head, oh, if the opportunity just came. Oh, if the right day come and I just so happily cross this person, I would knock the head off. I'm sorry to say it like
no,
that.
No,
no. I'm just saying, it's first just keeping
all,
it real.
No. First
keeping
of all, real. Do not apologize, because this is what this podcast is for. People need to understand the reality of life. And of course, if you've ever been through molestation, something that horrible, that's exactly how most people react. And if you can capture that on camera, which I know that you did.
Yeah, we did.
It's called a success.
And it was fun. It was crazy because I was nominated in 2 festivals for best acting because of that scene. And the only thing about me, I don't want to keep seeing that scene. Like, so in my head, I'm like, okay, I could appreciate you appreciating the art, but I don't want to keep seeing this. I don't want to see a still shot of this. I don't care. It looks good with the tear coming down and the gun in his hand. I don't care, because mentally I'm going back to that place and I'm visiting it as a 5, 6, 7 year old. and it's taking me somewhere else. So that will have to be the hardest scene I filmed as an actor.
How does it feel exposing the deepest, most vulnerable part in front of?
Remember, I hadn't confronted it. I had to, it's just that when I had to go there to get the emotions to make it realistic, that was just the tough part. But I had great people around me where my DP knew to shut it down. My casting director and assistant director were able to pull me to a private spot. And even some of the cast, they shut it down because the energy was felt in the room. It wasn't just vocalized. You could feel it. It was like, wait. It's like the lights just cut off and it went to a horror film.
What kind of advice would you give future actors who have to go through something that private in front of basically a room full of their peers?
Do your work. Do your inner work before you get on scene, before you accept that scene and you know the levels that they need you to get you at. To be honest, I would give the advice I would give. Don't even go back to that place. Find another dark place you can get if you got to get emotional.
Because that place would be too dark.
Some people, it's a trigger. It's a trigger for the rest of your life. Like they say, when you lose parents, right? You never get over it. You just learn how to deal with it better as the days go on. You know.
So doing something that deep could be something traumatizing to the act.
You're already traumatized.
More further traumatizing.
It reopens the wound. It's like one thing. I've had ACL surgery. I'm always have this scar here. So I'm always able to rub on it to know it's there. It's there. To reopen it, to go back in surgery again, I got to go back through the rehab. I got to go back to learning how to walk, how to bend my knee again. I got to go through this whole process. So when you do that emotionally and spiritually and you go back to those triggering moments, it takes you back and now you got to learn how to cope with it. Now you might be having nightmares and cold sweats again. So all of that is in the psyche.
So I'm interested, as a director, how did you simultaneously direct yourself in a scene like that and the other actor on set? Because I know you were the director and the actor. So how did you direct that?
While
being in that state.
When I'm acting in the scene, I delegate directing duties. So I'm told often, stay in character. We know you want to look at the monitor, stay in character. And so I give them that license and that authority to do that because I need to be put in my place at that time. I'm not director, I'm the actor. So I give them that power and they keep me in place.
Wow, so it's almost like a checks and balances.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is.
Where some people, which I've worked with, are more of a dictatorship where it's like, well, if I tell you to stand here, if I tell you to have this motivation, that's it. That's the law. You're really more open-minded. You know what you remind me of? You know of A Different World, right?
Yeah, of course.
Of course. One of those groundbreaking.
They just did the reunion tour,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Basically, for people who don't know online, it's basically a show about college students who basically go through the ins and outs of life, right?
Telling our age.
Yes, exactly.
We telling the high age.
What I watched is about 20 years after it came out, so I don't know.
Here you go, this guy here. Dude, you was watching it live, prime time, sitting there with
And one of the directors that was brought in after the first season, because they felt that it was very surface level,
mm-hmm.
right? The director that was brought in basically said, I want to hear your stories of how these people would interact. So basically, I can't tell you, being a 20-year-old black woman, how to be a 20-year-old black woman, right? Let me know what your experience is and we want to collaborate together. And they said from there on, from like season 2 to season 6, they had the best chemistry because not only was she checks and balancing herself.
You talking about Debbie Allen?
Yes, Debbie Allen. Uh-huh. Well,
that's Felice Rashad's sister.
Of course.
Okay.
For our audience who doesn't know who Felicia Rashad and Miss Debbie Allen, they're one of the most phenomenal. One was a wonderful actress and dancer and the other one was an amazing award-winning actress. So they're both wonderful and they're right. But what they did right is what you did, mm-hmm. right?
Still doing.
You and the actors and the people on set and your production team are all equal, meaning you don't big time. You don't try to put your position over anyone.
I'll say this. Yeah. I don't big time, but at the same time, there's still order.
Of course. No. Yes.
Right.
But where I'm going is you're open enough to get their information and mm-hmm. take their advice mm-hmm. and not reject it saying I'm certain so. Right?
Correct.
But I think that's the best way you can work. The best leaders take advice from their employees, from their council. You're still the leader, though. Mm-hmm. You're still the leader, but you have to be able to take counsel.
Sometimes the humble don't get you nowhere. But I'll tell you this about that.
That's very honest of you. We thank you so much.
Listen, we're
not always Boy Scouts in life, right?
Humble means lowly in spirit. Sometimes you gotta know you the ish and you gotta know your worth.
Oh, well.
Okay, now to you with the leadership.
Yes.
The importance with leaders and what we need to recognize with leadership is that leadership is not a position. We keep looking at titles as leadership. A great book I read a long time ago called 44 Laws of Leadership, I believe it was, John Maxwell. Read it over a decade ago. And he talks about how how there are different levels of leadership. And he took a football team. He took Andy Reid, who's coaching the Kansas City Chiefs, but he's coaching, I believe, at Philly or in San Fran then when he was an assistant.
Yeah.
And talked about how he was the coach, not him, John Gruden.
Yes.
Steve Mariucci.
Okay.
But, right, he's like, whatever, all these damn names, whatever. But how you have an offensive coordinator who runs the whole offense. And because he had that position, he thought he ran the offense. But the real leader was the quarterback's coach, because he had everybody's ear. He has everybody's heart. So it's not matter what title you have, it's what impact. Can you make things move? Can you make things happen? Will the people listen to your voice? Because see, what most leaders don't realize is that they're leading, but nobody is following. So if you turn around and nobody's following you.
So when you're on set, it's the same way.
It's the same way.
If you're a film director, it's the same way. And that's how you get the best out of them and the best out of yourself. So you're happy, they're happy, everyone's happy.
And it also comes from serving. So I'm serving them. If I'm serving you, I'm serving you the script with this role. That's me serving you.
Wow, I never thought of it that way.
I serve you food. I'm serving you.
Serving you. So we're both serving each other. They serve you with a talent. You serve them with the script and the role.
It's a dance. Everything goes back to each other. It's just broken up in different concepts where you get to understand it in its totality as a whole.
First of all, that's the first person who's ever explained it like that. Seriously, I'm really mean. But it's true. You're laughing, but it's true. But that's, first of all, please give me a role in your next production. That's wonderful. This is great. I want to dance. I want to dance too, mama. Last question for Teach His Own. This is something you probably didn't know, but in 1940, did you know that in 1947, there was a movie produced called, also called To Each His Own in 1947, where the protagonist fell in love with the pilot and he bore his illegitimate child after his death in war, right? The person who bore the child tried to adopt the child, but she was not able to because she was a woman and because of her age. And the boy ended up with another family. Talk about controversy. All right. To Each His Own seems to mirror some of those elements as the characters face hard and downright unfair circumstances due to things that they cannot change, right? We're only hope. That's why I call you the Hope Diamond. A lot of your episodes seem to reside or being resolved by hope, by people having hope of a good outcome, where they've hit a wall and it's like, all I have is hope. I hope this turns out well, because if it doesn't, I'm screwed. A lot of your episodes seem to echo that, which is, I don't know if you noticed that. Right,
I like how you say hope.
Yeah, how does your series echo this sentiment?
You said hope, that's your perspective.
Yeah,
I can't take that away from
okay.
you.
Okay, but what's your perspective?
Knowing.
Okay.
When you're able to identify, you know, you're not hoping for it to change. When you know what's going on, you work for it to change. And so when you look at all these problems being presented in Teacher's Own, it's them finding out, being able to identify what the issue is. And then you're seeing their journey on working to the solution.
Wisdom.
That's how I go about it. The cliffhanger could be the next issue that's coming up. Find out you got an inheritance. You might then grow up with a parent, but you come to find out later on that parent left you a whole trust.
Well.
These are stories, this stuff that you have coming up. We're talking about legacy. Inheritance. Talking about generational curses that have to be broke. All of this stuff is identified. It's just different levels to it. Some financial, some emotional, some physical, some sexual, some, like, you have all these different platonic, some romantic.
What
you
a
have
series. Wow, what a series. Okay. Well, I'm definitely watching the next series. I'm just saying. I'm just watching the next.
You
might see me in the next series as well. Listen, you never know.
We're about creating a platform for creatives to come on and display their gifts and who are serious about the craft. We don't discriminate.
Yes.
It's not all about looks. That's like saying, Hollywood saying you can't have a plus-size woman as the lead woman. Says who? I know plenty of plus-size women as leading life and leading communities and leading governments and leading businesses.
Yes.
And doing the damn thing.
But how are they represented on film? Are they marginalized?
Of course. That's how they do it.
But see, that's why being the power of a filmmaker is so important, because you have a power to change that narrative, and hopefully you can get the funding to be able to make it right. Is this real or not real?
My brother.
What do you think? I know what the answer is. I just want to know what you think, Mr. DeMarin.
Without looking at Hollywood, go to your latest city council meeting. Go to the latest CRA meeting to see where these grants and money is going to. There are gatekeepers in every level, whether it's government, whether it's entertainment, whether it's politics. There's gatekeepers everywhere, because they got to make sure everybody don't get in. And they try to keep it the good old boys, or, you know, however it is. So, yeah, I believe it.
The good old boys.
I believe it. Sweat equity. The sweat equity is something that somebody, everybody need to realize. If you're not putting and investing into your own, don't expect nobody else to.
Even if it hurts, right?
We run to people first, wanting them to hand up. You know what the person goes? A wise person with money and stature.
Club, and with that, his name is DIAMOSDEMERRITT. Look him up on all of the social media handles you can possibly look him up on. And AMPU is ANPU Productions.
Production without the S.
Ah, production without the S. So AMPU Production. Guys, before we go, I just wanted to say it really has been an honor having this in this studio. You really do give hope like a diamond. That even if you're facing 3 life sentences, right, and plus 70 years, right, that would have ended anyone's life already. Their mindset would have been, I have no future. But because of that hope of light inside of you, you use those experiences to shine many different facets of life, including film work. It's been an honor, man.
Thank you, man.
I love you, brother.
Love you. Love the team, right, man. You guys great over here, man. Got to do this again sometime.
To our listeners, thank you again for joining us in the Cinema Pathway podcast today. I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. Our producer and director is the lovely Juliette Asson, and our associate producer is Victor Hugo Pereira. The executive producer and editor is Freddie R. Rodriguez. This was a presentation by Paradoxical Films. And please visit our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com. For more information about today's podcast. And you can also email us if you like at cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com, where you can send all comments, suggestions for all future episodes. Lights out!